Hey, this is Cameron from Vancouver, Canada. Welcome back, Shirley fans. Over the next couple of weeks, my friend and former college roommate and fellow Tesla fan, Jason Colvin, along with his friend and podcast partner, Dee Graves, whom is usually on the right side of these battles, are going to compare the raw soul and hard rock of two great bands and two great albums. The Black Crowes' Shake Your Moneymaker versus Tesla's The Great Radio Controversy. Admittedly, one of my favorite bands and albums from back in the early 90s and still to this day. So it's time to hang tough. This ain't no flight to nowhere. We're on our way to paradise, and that's just the way it is. Plug it in, crank it up, and let the battle begin.
Hey, Shirley fans, we are coming at you live today. Just a couple of modern day cowboys bringing you a new episode every week and getting better every show. So if you love songs like we do, hang tough with us as we travel up Heaven's Trail, discussing each of these songs track by track, making magic and telling it the way it is.
Oh, that's so good, man.
You inspired me from that last episode.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. You know, days go by and life drags on, but the podcast keeps on rocking. So, hey, you know, people don't know this, but a lot of times we build these matchups in advance.
Yep.
And this matchup, the Black Crowes versus Tesla, was supposed to be last year, celebrating 1989.
Yeah.
But it's one of those that kind of got moved and it got pushed and then it got, and then we're like, hey, Black Crowes is 1990, so we can celebrate 1990.
Right.
So we have literally been waiting over a year to complete this matchup. And this week you tried to throw me a curveball and say, hey, what do you think about it?
Yeah. So so welcome back to the Shirley Podcast, everybody. We're here for an episode on Tesla's Great Radio Controversy. We are comparing it from last week's episode to the Black Crowes' Shake Your Moneymaker. And I got done with the Black Crowes, and in my mind, for that whole year, I was thinking that Tesla was much more of an acoustic bluesy sounding kind of band, because that's just my memory. I loved them in the 90s. We covered their songs in my band. I've got a story that I'm going to tell here in just a second that's, you know, a great moment with Tesla. But in my head, they were much more of a bluesy acoustic sound like Black Crowes were, right?
You were brought up on five-man acoustical jam is what it sounds like to me.
Well, yes, that's what happened. I was just like, I guess my memories kind of were really mostly inspired by five-man acoustical jam, which also came out in 1990.
It did.
And so it like this one, The Great Radio Controversy, are right there on, I mean, with, we think about the singles, we're hitting their 35-year anniversary for just about all of them,
for
right?
Sure, yeah, for sure.
Same time as Shake Your Moneymaker came out. And so when I heard this album, I was like, whoa, first few songs out of the gate, I'm just thinking, this is like hard rock metal stuff.
It's hard rock, man.
It is not the bluesy stuff I was expecting at all. Now, you get a little further into the album and that changes, but I was like, oh, dude, I'm sorry. I made the mistake. We need to do five-man acoustical jam. It's 1990, and you're like, no, we've been prepping.
I prep in advance.
Way more in advance than I do. If I prep as much as you do, I get overloaded and then it's a mess and 8 hours long and it's terrible. Yes. So I'm happy that we're doing the Great Radio Controversy.
Good.
We'll touch on the five-man acoustical jam a little bit, undoubtedly, as we go through this.
Sure.
But yes, we are here today to talk about something that we've been anticipating for a while now.
I want to ask you how you got into Tesla, how you discovered them. But before we do, we need to give a shout out to, we've got a couple of new Patreon members I want to give a shout out to.
Yes.
We've got our new friend, Mr. Mark Myers.
Mark Myers, executive producer for today's episode.
Yes. He's a pastor.
Yes.
He said he incorporated our Lady, Lady, Lady matchup song podcast into his sermon.
Yeah, I'm really curious as to how he made a sermon out of that. And I texted you and I was like, had we called that Lady on Lady Action like I wanted to, he probably would not have been able to use it in his sermon. But
Mark, thank you.
Yes, thanks,
we are
Mark.
Honored to be preaching, if you will, here at the Shirley You Can't Be Serious podcast.
Yeah.
And we also need to shout out Rich the Union Guy.
Rich the Union Guy. Hi, Rich. Thank you so much for joining our Patreon family. Text us back, man. I hit you up. give me a text.
Let's hear from you, man. Yeah, let's go.
And guys, if you want to be one of our Patreon members, it's very simple. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/Shirley Podcast. You can sign up for free and get involved in some of the conversations. We do polls and stuff like that. And then for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of our One Hit Wonder episodes and other kind of novelty songs that we do, which are really some of our most fun episodes. And if you decide to be especially generous, we'll start sending you gifts with your name and the Shirley You Can't Be Serious podcast logo on it and stuff.
Speaking of the Shirley You Can't Be Serious logo,
yeah,
how's the merch store coming?
I am working on it. Etsy decided that it didn't like us, so I'm given I'm given the proverbial signs everywhere there's signs that Etsy means we don't want to do business with you. So I'm opening a Shopify account.
Let's go.
I'll do it.
Okay. So tell me, how did you get involved in Tesla? Like, how'd you find out about him?
So in the 90s, we were doing cover songs, right? I was in a band and we were covering all kinds of things that were popular at the time, including the Black Crowes. I mentioned that our very first song was Hard to Handle. At the end of the show, came out in the middle of the audience and with our acoustic guitars and did She Talks to Angels and Patience by Guns N' Roses. But I had been playing guitar for a while at this time. I mean, a few years anyway. And I'm a guy who likes classical music. I was raised on not just Bugs Bunny, but hooked on the classics. And I got into classical music quite a bit.
Right.
And I hear this thing on the radio that I'm like, this sounds like a classical guitar. I'm not used to hearing this kind of thing on the radio. And it was Love Song by Tesla. And I was like, I've got to find out how to play this song. So I went on a mission to find out how to play this song. I ended up getting several of the albums, obviously, including the 5-man acoustical jam. Then I got very lucky one evening. I had a buddy who was working at a bar. This is back when Tesla was kind of on their downslide, just maybe a year-ish before they broke up. And so they were playing smaller clubs, and he was bartending at this club. And he's like, hey, do you want to get backstage for the Tesla show?
I was like, heck yeah. For sure.
So I brought my guitars with me. I was like, I'm going to get my guitar signed. This is going to be great. I watched the show. It was fantastic. They, you know, as they're closing out the first part of the act, the second part of the act is they all go sit up front on the stage and do their 5-man acoustical jam bit. It was kind of like the best of both worlds there. And then I went backstage and, you know, waited. There were several other people back there waiting, some of them very hot. it's the rock star lifestyle, right?
It is.
And Brian and the drummer, Troy, came back at that point, and they're not very cool. Like, Brian was kind of douchey. Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, just kind of sarcastic and not cool when I was trying to talk to him about stuff. I kind of understand now, after having read his book, that he's dealing with some issues and struggles and stuff. But, you know, okay, maybe he had a bad day. Well, I won't fault him for that.
Of course.
Then they leave, and a little while later, Jeff Keith and Frank Hannon come back. And I've gotten the first two guys to sign the guitar. I get Jeff to sign the guitar. I get Frank to sign the guitar. And he's like, hey, man, hang out and play if you want to play. And I was like, are you kidding me? And so I had my 12-string there with me. And he, you know, talked to a few people. And then he came over and sat down with me. And we sat there and played guitar for an hour and a half.
What?
Like, he had just done this full show. And he sits down and plays with me. And we're playing Tesla songs to start, you know. And then he's like, hey, play me something that you wrote. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, playing him some stuff. And he's like, okay, slow down. And he's listening to it. And then he starts playing lead over a song that I've got. And I'm just like,
that is amazing.
My mind is being blown. Like, and I'm like, after an hour of this, I'm like, man, it's so kind of you to spend this much time with me and just hang out and be so cool. I just really, you know, this is amazing. You're a great guy. And he's like, when I was young, I met Eddie Van Halen, and he sat and played with me for an hour or so after his show and was super kind. And I said, if I ever am this big, I'm going to be nice like Eddie was. And so that he was inspired by Eddie Van Halen to do that.
Like, it's like Eddie Van Halen's your guitar granddaddy.
It's kind of like, yeah, it's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, yeah.
That's incredible. No, that's an amazing story.
Yes, and it's been an amazing story my entire life until yesterday when you called me and said, you blew it, dude.
Okay. I did call you. You answer the phone. You're like, hey, you're on speaker. And I said, D, you blew it.
Yeah, I had no idea what you're talking about.
So what we found out later by doing our discoveries, Tesla hired the replacement for Tommy Scio, their other guitarist, the other one other than Frank Hannon. They found him on MySpace. His name's Dave Rude. Good guitarist. But you could be touring with Tesla today.
Well, you told me at the time that he had played with them backstage, like that he had done the exact same thing that I did.
Yes.
And then they're like, hey, come join the band. And I'm like, oh, what?
I know.
When was this?
I know.
And you're like, 2004. I'm like, okay, well, I missed that by like, you know, 8 years. So I'm okay. And I was not.
Your timing was off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was 19 at the time that I played with him.
I mean, chicks and drugs and money, yeah. Fame.
Yeah, could have had it all. Could have been a contender, but now I'm right. Nothing but a bum.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a great story.
Well, how about you? How'd you get into these guys?
I mean, I discovered them on MTV. Yeah. Basically, I Love Song was my entry point, mm-hmm. and then I went backwards to Mechanical Resonance, and I absolutely love Mechanical Resonance.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Mechanical Resonance, Great Radio Controversy, Five Man Acoustical Jam was very important to me, and then Psychotic Supper when I got to college. You know, people forget about Psychotic Supper. After listening to these guys talk, it's like universal that that's their favorite Tesla album, all these guys. That album was released in that same pocket of time in late 91 with Nevermind and Use Your Illusion and the Black Album from Metallica and No Pearl More Jam. Tears and 10. We just had a ton of great music, and it tends to kind of get forgotten, but that's a great album with great songs.
Yeah, absolutely it does.
All right.
Enough about us.
I mean,
let's talk about these songs, man.
All right. Well, let's dive in. So,
okay.
Just a quick overview of the album.
Go ahead.
The Great Radio Controversy is the second album by Tesla. It was released in February of 1989. And the term, the Great Radio Controversy, has to do with this battle between Nikola Tesla and Thomas Edison over whether radio should be profitable or free. I don't really... Tell me about it.
So this is more about the who was the inventor, because Marconi is the guy. Like, Edison had taken a lot of Tesla's ideas. Tesla worked for General Electric, and basically Edison would take Tesla's ideas, patent them, and then make them his own. And he was notorious for, like, once he's gotten the patent, he's suing anybody who tries to do anything similar to what he's got the patent on, right? So that's part one. But part two is Marconi basically does the exact same thing with Tesla. Tesla has essentially perfected the radio to where it's a genuinely usable thing. I mean, it's got a long history, but genuinely usable thing. But Marconi rushes the plans to the patent office and files first. And for the longest time, it was like, oh, Marconi was the inventor of the radio. But it turns out there was a lawsuit over it, and the court found that Tesla was the legitimate guy who had invented the radio. And that was the Great Radio Controversy.
If you want to know more about the Great Radio Controversy, go listen to the song Edison's Medicine off of Psychotic Supper.
Yeah.
That's the extent of my knowledge. But as I understand it, Tesla died penniless, and essentially he is the model for the crazy mad scientist, like long hair, dirty fingernails, penniless, wacky.
He was wacky. Like, for example, Mechanical Resonance, that comes from a theory of his that, like, everything has a resonant sound, like a vibration, right? A resonance. And that if you, and the entire earth has the resonance. And so if you played something at the right resonance, you could literally split the earth. So that was just a theory of his, yes.
Mad scientist stuff.
Yeah. Have you seen The Prestige?
Maybe.
David Bowie plays Nikola Tesla.
Really?
Yeah, it's a Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah, I may need to rewatch that one.
Yeah, it's a great one. It's got Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman in it. Fantastic movie.
I need to go read it.
And Scarlett Johansson in some skimpy lingerie. Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Okay, are you ready? First song on the album?
Let's dive in. Song number one.
Hang Tough. Here we go. Sorry,
I knew something weird was going on there.
Okay, sorry about that, everybody. Another 90s throwback for you. Needle scratcher.
I believe
there.
That's Hanging Tough.
All right, here we go. Song number one from Tesla this time, Hang Tough.
That's more like it.
Yeah.
Kicking ass and taking names.
I mean, what a great kickoff song. It's yeah. It's got that bold bass intro.
Yeah.
It's the perfect, like, welcome to this album. We're going to kick your butt for the next 70 minutes.
Yeah. And you've got some amazing, like, speed metal lead in there. The brilliance of two guys who are equipped to play both lead and rhythm guitar so that they can bounce back and forth off of each other, or in this scenario play the exact same thing at the exact same time sometimes, just builds that big round sound with the power metal behind it. It's great. I love it.
This was the second single released April of 1989. This video was directed by our man Nigel Dick.
Never forget his name.
Right? We've talked, how many times have we talked about
him? I don't
know,
a bunch. He did a bunch of those videos in the 80s.
So here's the deal. I mean, he did Shout, Mother's Talk, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. He did Sweet Child of Mine, Welcome to the Jungle. He did Do They Know It's Christmas by Band-Aid.
I believe he also did, like, Hit Me Baby One More Time, too, right?
He did Hit Me Baby One More Time.
I remembered that,
that's
right.
That's it. He did Down in a Hole by Alice in Chains.
Oh, nice.
He did Patience. He did Rocket by Def Leppard. The guy's done it's everything. Awesome. The cool thing about this video is that, like, that bass part in the video.
Yeah.
You have a little boy who's, like, playing with this, like, telegraph machine, and it looks exactly like the album cover, which I think is a really cool nod.
That's fantastic. So, it's funny, you mentioned Def Leppard, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so these guys, they started off, well, I mean, Brian was in a band called Rage at first.
Yes.
He's the guy that was playing in bands the longest as a continuous member of this band. I mean, you basically got three core guys who are always in Tesla, right? But and there's some ins and outs throughout that process. But Brian and Frank, other guy who's Frank Hannon, who's in the, yeah, Brian Wheat. Frank Hannon.
Your buddy, Frank Hannon.
My buddy, Frank Hannon.
Right.
My birthday buddy, too, right? He's both of us October 3rd. Oh, Steve Ray Vaughan, also October 3rd, by the way. Tommy Lee, also October 3rd.
That's a heck of a band you got started, man, right there.
We can just call ourselves the Libras. And
D and the Libras.
So Frank and Brian, in 1981, they go to see a Def Leppard show, right?
What?
Yeah, the High and Dry Tour, right?
Yes.
And this is how different things were in those days, right? Number one, Def Leppard wasn't Pour Some Sugar on Me Big yet.
That's right.
But still not bad. I mean, they got Mutt Lange producing their album.
Of course.
They're doing a big tour.
Yes.
And so Frank and Brian and this guy named, I think it was Henry or something.
Okay.
They all go together. And then after the show, Frank has to leave because he's only like 16 years old or whatever.
Yeah, you know, he's a young guy. Yeah.
And so Brian...
Mom's going to ground me if I don't get home.
Yeah. Brian and Henry are hanging out by the tour bus, and out walks Pete Willis and Rick Allen, the drummer. Yes.
Yeah.
Still has two arms. and they walk out, and his buddy, Brian's buddy, is like, "Hey, guys." And they're like, "Hey." And then he goes, "I got some weed." And they're like, "Oh, yeah?" And they're like, "Yeah, you want to get high?" And he's like, "Yeah, we're staying over at the Holiday Inn," you know, and he tells them where they're staying, the hotel room and everything, and they go up and they hang out with those guys and get stoned. I mean, can you imagine any band, any of Def Leppard significance going, "Oh, yeah, our hotel's over here, this room right here, seven, these guys we just met 3 seconds ago, who's we've got some weed."
Yeah, right.
Wow.
The key word there.
Yeah, and then 5 years later, they were opening for them.
On the Hysteria tour. And yeah, that was the thing.
The biggest tour.
I mean, yeah, it was the... Def Leppard was ruling the world at that time.
Yeah.
So, backstage to, I mean, leading off. Incredible.
Yeah.
You know, I heard Brian Wheat talk about Frank Hannon. So, Brian Wheat was in this band called Rage. And he had, you know, some of his buddies. And they played keggers.
I'll tell you, the buddies' names were Larry, Stacy, Nick, and Wendell on guitar.
Once again... lost to the sands of time. But he had been hearing whispers of this kid named Frank, who is like 15 years old, who could really play the guitar.
Well, so they were practicing in the back of like an ice house, like an ice factory. That was their practice space. And the guy who owned the place says, hey, my girlfriend's son plays guitar and he'd like to come jam with you.
What?
And they're like, okay. And he's like, they're like, does he have any experience? He's like, nah, he's only 14. And they're like,
what?
Yeah, whatever, you know, whatever.
Brian is kind of a no BS kind of guy.
Right, yeah.
He didn't have time for a lot of BS.
He'll tell you to F off if he wants you to F off. That's right. Yes, that's right. And so they're like, yeah, okay, whatever. Because the guy's letting him use the space to practice in, right? So he says Frank rolls up in a 47 Chevy Classic looking like a freaking gangster, right? And he gets out of the car, and he's this skinny blonde kid. And when they hear him play, all of a sudden, Brian's like, well, Wendell's out, Frank's in.
Yeah.
And that's how fast it was. And you said that what his thought was when he saw him play.
Yeah, he said, I looked at him and I said, this kid has been touched by God.
Yeah.
That's how good he is.
He got out of the 47 Chevy with a Fender Stratocaster and a Marshall amp. And in Brian Wheat's words, if you had a Marshall amp back then, you were a bad mother.
That's great, man. That's great. So that's the beginning of Tesla.
Yeah. I mean, little by little, those guys dropped off. Rage became not Rage anymore. They started another band and they called it Earthshaker. Mm-hmm. And they need a new singer. And these girls say, hey, we heard this guy singing like karaoke or something, and he's really good. You should let him come play with you.
So this is Jeff Keith.
Yeah.
He's kind of legendary around here. He grew up in Oklahoma. He graduated from Ida Belle High School, which is little bitty town in southeastern Oklahoma.
Yeah. I think he was in Texarkana for a while because he mentioned that. I remember him mentioning that during the concert I saw back in 95 or 96, whenever it was.
You remember the last time we talked about Texarkana, Texas?
No.
Smokey and the Bandit, because that's where they were going to get the 6-point beer.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway.
Because he's thirsty, dummy.
So Jeff Keith, Oklahoma native, and I might as well tell this story now, but he played a show in Oklahoma City, and I bet you $1 million it was a day before or a day after your Fort Smith show.
Very well could have been, yeah.
But he lost his class ring during the show.
Oh.
Right? And yeah. He's up there singing, doing whatever, and it goes, whoop. Falls off. And he tells the crowd, he's like, hey guys, I lost my ring. Will you guys give it back to me? You know? And instead of most hard rock shows either getting pelted in the forehead with it,
yeah,
or somebody just says, no way I'm stealing this Jeff Keith's ring.
Right.
They pass it back to him.
Oh, nice.
So the concert I was with Patreon member Cameron Eckert, mm-hmm. He mentioned that story again and said, that's why Oklahoma people are the best, because I lose my ring, you guys pass it up, hand it back to me. Other places, I got hit in the forehead with it.
By the way, since you mentioned Patreon member, I will just say, last episode when we did the Black Crowes, we did our own little introduction there. That was not the original Twice as Hard that you heard entering that episode. That was me playing a guitar built by Patreon member Kevin Davis, along with Patreon member Gautier Pirozak playing bass and drums and mixing it all together.
Thank you.
Thank you guys very much. Not only are you Patreon members, you're band members too.
Right? That is so cool, man. That's so cool. Before we move off of this song, yep. I want to just make a comment about the video. So number one, these guys are still pretty new in the MTV realm.
Mm-hmm.
The drummer, Troy, always looks like he's going to the gym. So he's wearing shorts. Like, he clearly got this from Rick Allen. Rick Allen's like, I don't have time for leather pants. I'm wearing shorts.
Right. It's hot behind the drums.
It's hot, and I'm wearing a T-shirt and shorts, and that's it. So Troy's looking like he's going to the gym. Jeff Keith is wearing his signature jeans with the handprints on them that reappear and become a little bit more iconic during the Love Song video.
Mm-hmm.
But when I read the comments on YouTube, people were like, I was a cancer survivor. I played this song to inspire me. My marriage was on the rocks. We played this song to inspire us. And I know for a fact, when I lived in Oklahoma City in 1995, after the bombing, this was the first song that the local rock radio station played after it, nothing but news coverage of the Oklahoma City bombing, saying, hey, Oklahoma City, hang tough. You gotta give it your best shot. Give it
It's the, yeah, that mentality of never giving up. And it's great because Jeff Keith would write the lyrics for these songs. These guys got lumped in with the hair metal guys.
Right.
But they weren't.
Right.
They were absolutely not. They weren't wearing the black leather, like you said. They're wearing their jeans or their shorts or
jeans,
whatever.
T-shirts.
They got their hair teased up just like Axl Rose did for the first video. But after that, they're like, we're not doing that crap
right.
anymore.
Right.
Now I can see with Frank and Tommy Scio that they got the long hair.
They do. They look like rock stars. Yeah.
And they play like those guys
no
too.
Doubt.
But these lyrics, they have more meaning than, you know, girls at the strip club or doing heroin or 100%. Any of that other stuff, you know.
Generally great. Positive mm-hmm. lyrics.
Yeah.
Which was kind of unusual at the time.
Well, and Brian said that Jeff Keith is just always that positive guy. Like always the look on the bright side. How do we have fun? How love do it. We make this good? That kind of guy. And he just seems like a genuinely great dude.
All right. Next song on the album.
Yeah.
Is a song called Lady Luck.
Struggle with whether he's actually talking about a real female or if he's just talking about luck and good luck and the fact that he didn't get to get any.
When he says, how do you do? She said, I don't. This song was the song they led their shows off at the residency in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Right. Lady Luck.
Yeah, of course.
What a perfect song to lead off in Las Vegas with.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So I listened to a podcast this week and a bunch of call-in Tesla fans. A lot of people had this in their top five song of like all-time favorite Tesla songs, which I found interesting. It's not a single. It's a great song, though.
Yeah.
Hard rocker.
Yeah.
I wanted to get back to Jeff Keith real quick.
Okay.
Born in Texarkana, grew up in Idabel, moved to Northern California after he graduated from high school. He drove a septic truck.
Oh, my word.
Right? He drove a septic truck. He's, I didn't talk about this. He said, we're number
one. Sounds like a job.
Well, he said, we're number one in the number two business.
Uh-huh.
But he would pop in tapes, like cassette tapes, and sing to cassettes.
Foghat was his favorite.
There you go.
Yeah. And five-man electrical jam.
Makes perfect sense, right?
Yeah.
He was in FFA in high school.
Future Farmers of America.
Future Farmers of America. And that was that's the direction he was going.
Mm.
And now he's like,
he's a former rock star.
Yeah, he's a rock star.
Yeah, I like this song too. It kind of is a sandwich song for me though, because I really love the first one and I love this next one coming up. Can we jump into this one?
Let's get it.
Okay, third song on the album, Heaven's Trail or No Way Out. I freaking love this song.
Oh,
love this song.
It is a banger, dude.
So this is another one that was on the Five Man Acoustical Jam album. This is the second one or third, because the first one is kind of a mashup of Coming At You Live and Truckin' by
yeah.
The Grateful Dead, right?
Yep.
But this one, I love this. I love it electric, but I love it acoustic even more. Listening to him playing that slide on the guitar sounds fantastic.
You know, when I watched the video, so I love this song too, and the version on Five Man Acoustical Jam is amazing, but in the video for the studio version of this song, Frank Hannon, it's so cool. He plays two different guitars. Like he still has one strapped on while he's playing another one,
mm-hmm.
and it's the intro, and then when it needs to go electric, he gets after it with the other one.
Yeah.
So this is one of their signature songs. Now in the video, they have like signs that say no machines. It's kind of their mantra. In the studio, it's raw rock and roll. They don't like double tracking. When they're on stage, they're playing live guitars.
Yeah.
They're kind of critical of people who have a lot of stuff going on in the background that's not really playing.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, they're kind of describing Def Leppard. And I am the biggest Def Leppard fan.
Right,
but
yeah.
Def Leppard was hugely instrumental in their career, mm-hmm. dragging them around on the Hysteria tour.
Right.
But Def Leppard plays tons of effects like on Rocket and stuff like that.
Sure. And they're a brick by brick Mutt Lange style of album too.
That's right.
Which these guys are definitely not. Now, this is good. This is a good segue because we're talking five-man acoustical jam and that kind of concept, right? So they're at the BAMMYs, which is the Bay Area Grammys, right?
Okay.
And they do an acoustic version of Love Song, you know, on stage for the crowd, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And so there's a lady in the crowd at that moment named Queenie Taylor, and she owns a club with Boz Scaggs. Remember Boz Scaggs?
Saturday Night Fever.
Toto episode, all of that. Yes, yeah. Right? They own a club called Slim's, and she sees them do this acoustic version of Love Song, and she gets a hold of their managers, who we'll talk about soon. And she's like, I would love for them to come and do like a whole hour and a half set at Slim's. And so their managers are Peter Minch and Cliff Bernstein. And those guys will be huge. We'll talk about them in a second. But they were motivational in the right way at the right time, okay?
Yes.
And so when Peter Minch comes to them and is like, they want you to do this full hour and a half set, Brian Weed is like, no. We are a rock band. We're not going to go do acoustical music. That's ridiculous.
Right.
And Peter Minch is like, yeah, you probably can't do it anyway. Yeah. And they were like, we aren't going to do it. And so they put together the hour and a half set that ultimately is so popular at that location that they start doing it in multiple locations. They record several versions, but the one that we end up with is the one that they did in Philadelphia. Mm. Now,
don't you even worry, Philadelphia.
Right. We're just talking about tours at this point. But yeah. Then the song Signs, which is originally by Five Man Electrical Jam, it comes out as a single and it gets a lot of airplay. And so the radio company's like, hey, we want to do a full record of this.
Let's listen to Signs really quick. Okay. I mean, you're talking about one of the big songs of the 1990s.
Yeah, and yeah. It's obviously very raw, right? This is a concert song.
It's great.
And when it became so popular, they were like, we want a full album, and we're going to take it, we're going to produce it, we're going to overdub some stuff. And they were like, no.
Right.
We're not going to do that. If you're going to make this an album, we want it to be completely the way that it was. Well, as it turned out, the best show that they had, that they thought they had to pick from, was this Philadelphia show. But for that set, somehow Brian Wheat's bass did not get recorded. Everything else got recorded, but not Brian Wheat's bass.
Okay.
And so they're like, we gotta have you come in and overdub it. It just has to be that way, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, this is kind of cool. He's like, okay, I'm going to do it, but we're not going to stop and start and re-record. We're going to start the tape. I'm going to start playing, and I'm going to play it straight through just like I'm sitting on stage. And
love
that's
it.
The way they did it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. By the way, the motivation of their managers to use that psychology, it reminds me of Smokey the Bandit. He's like, oh, that's great. Psychology, why don't you just say something about my mother? Like, your mother is so ugly. You guys probably aren't good enough to pull this off. And oh, yeah, watch us.
Yeah.
And it becomes Five Man Acoustical Jam.
It becomes, like, Signs becomes one of their biggest singles. I would never have heard of the song except for them. Most people think it's their song. And they began to realize that they were not rich rock stars. They were poor rock stars. Like, they were in debt because they had spent all these money on videos and tours and all of this other stuff, not realizing that's all their money. Like, all the money they make for their concerts and their album sales is going to pay for all of these things. So they weren't really making very much. The five-man acoustical jam pulls them out of debt and makes them successful and lets them keep on going.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I love it. By the way.
Yeah.
There's another song that I want to talk to you about here in a minute,
okay,
where they have basically claimed it was by another artist. They covered it,
uh-huh,
and it has really since become theirs.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
Talk about that later.
Yeah.
Next song on the album is a song called Be a Man.
George George Thurgood, eat your heart out. Tell me you don't want to start clapping your hands over your head on this one.
I mean, we're sitting here. We're just bobbing our heads.
Such a good song. Great crowd song. Super smooth slide on the guitar again. I mean, this kind of brings it back to what I was expecting when I first started listening to this again. Who else was playing, other than George Thurgood and the Black Crowes, who else was doing this? I can't think of anybody.
Yeah. So I wanted to bring up Jeff Keith again about him making the band.
Okay.
So, you know, he played at karaoke bars. He was introduced by this girl, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they bring him on stage and he's so inexperienced. He doesn't know how to operate the equipment. He doesn't know how to hold the microphone.
Never been on stage in his life.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he's singing. And so Brian Wheat thinks this guy sucks.
Yes. Yeah. So he would be so far away from his microphone that you couldn't hear his voice. And so the guys, you got guys who are running the board who are like, well, we got to turn it up. Well, when they would turn it up, that caused more feedback. So it's just, they're getting all this squelchy feedback. You can't hear his vocal. And after the show, Brian goes to Frank and he's like, we got to get rid of this guy. He sucks. And Frank is like, no, man. There was one point in one song where we both leaned in and sang the lyric at the same time. And I heard him singing and he was amazing. We just got to teach him how to use the microphone.
I love it. You know, Brian Wheat has called him since the best rock and roll singer since Steven Tyler.
That might be a bit of a stretch, but it's, I mean, he's good. He really is good.
He's got that real strong rasp.
Yeah.
And I don't know how he does it all these years, but he's still out there kicking butt, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we ready for the next song in the album?
Next song in the album.
Lazy Days, Crazy Nights. Song about being a rock star.
So this to me is the undiscovered gem on this album.
It's great. I love it. I love Frank's chord choices on so many of these songs, and this is one of them. Fantastic.
It bangs. It's got that kind of darker tone to it.
Yep.
I saw a video on YouTube. I don't know if it was an official video or whether it was kind of a fan-made video.
Oh, okay.
It's behind the scenes, but it's also a live show. And they're doing things like they're in the swimming pool, they're riding a roller coaster, they're playing, and it just looks like a life that you would love to have. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, the rock star lifestyle when it's good. Because when it's good, it's really, really good. Uh-huh. And when it's bad, it's awful.
Well, and it turned bad for these guys.
Sure.
The video is also clearly shot on a VCR handheld recorder.
Right.
Which looks like it's, you know, I mean, it looks like it's 1989. I mean, it's just how things looked. So yeah. Love this song. It's underrated. I don't think people appreciate this one as much. I love those crazy days and crazy nights. At this point, I was going to say the band had become City Kid.
Yeah. City Kid was their name for a bit. They get their management. They get Cliff Bernstein and Peter Minch in there.
Who are also managers for Def Leppard.
Right. They are working with them, but they realize they need a lot of work, right? And so they holler at a friend of theirs named Ronnie Montrose. Yes, that Ronnie Montrose.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, and they're like, hey, we want you to work with these guys, see what you can do to build them up and make them polished instead of the kind of rough-edged thing that they are right now.
Right.
And so Ronnie gives them a lot of advice, brings them a lot of different songs to choose from, and one of the songs that he brings is from a band called PhD out of Britain. Okay.
This comes from Ronnie Montrose?
Ronnie Montrose is the one that suggested this, right?
Okay, very good.
And so he says, I think you guys should cover this song. It's called Little Susie's on the Up.
Little Susie's on the Up.
Now, I thought when I got this little bit of information that I'm going to blow Jason's mind. So I sent you the video for the PhD song of the little PhD version of Little Susie's on the Up, right? And you respond back and you were, this is the musical savant that I co-host an episode with. He's like, yes, I believe that was the fifth video played on MTV. I thought you were going to have never heard of it, had no idea. And you were like giving me details that I didn't even know.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're the man.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate that. Let's listen to the PhD version of that song really quick.
Okay. Before we trash on PhD too hard,
right?
Because that is not at all the song that we know as Lil Susie.
Right.
Those guys went on. I mean, the PhD didn't last, but those guys went on to play with some major artists.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, but I mean, you've got this. Again, it was the early stages of MTV, and they had an actual music video that was a story, not just the band up on stage singing a song. Now, the story involved a woman pulling an egg out of a saxophone, but why? I don't. What?
Super early MTV, right?
Right.
And basically, they're showing what they've got, which is nothing.
The beer commercial guy leaves his day job and goes direct music videos at night.
Right. That's right.
And so Ronnie Montrose brings them this song, right? And they obviously make it their own. Let's listen to that now. That kicks some major booty, right? Yeah. I mean, they totally have made it their own song.
They have confiscated this. This now belongs to Tesla.
Absolutely does. Like, even more than Signs, I would say. Because this, I mean, Signs still sounds pretty much like the original version, just nobody really heard that one.
Right.
But this one, they've rocked it up. They've changed the progression a little bit. They've changed the melody a little bit. And they've absolutely knocked it out of the park.
It's amazing.
Now, what you may not know is that Ronnie Montrose dealt with a lot of difficult things later on in his life. They all kind of remained friends with him, even though he was kind of hardcore on them. And he would occasionally see them, and he would kind of give them a hard time of, you know, I brought you guys a Little Susie, you know, like you owe me a flat screen TV or something, you know.
Yeah.
And so he got cancer, was dealing with that, had to fight that, would still go and play live shows from time to time. And at some point, Brian Wheat gets wind of, you know, that Ronnie's like, hey, you guys, you owe me a flat screen TV. And so he says to Frank, hey, let's buy him a flat screen TV. Well, this is back in the days, like the early 2000s, when the plasma TVs were $10,000, right?
Big and heavy. Yeah.
Big and heavy. And yeah. And so, but he buys it for him, doesn't tell him, buys it for him, drives it 90 miles over to the show that Ronnie is doing, you know, somewhere else in California. Knocks on the door, and he's like, Wheat, what the fuck are you doing here? He's like, come here, I want to show you something. He's like, okay. And so he comes out. He opens the back of the truck to show him the TV. He said Ronnie Montrose literally broke down in tears.
Oh, man, that's...
Literally broke down in tears.
Oh, that's a sweet story. I love
that. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's nice. A lot of us go through life with the John McClane line in our head of, how you feeling, Roy?
Pretty
f***ing unappreciated. Yeah. And so sometimes people will do something that just, it's unexpected, and it means you mean something to them. And to get those moments where you do feel appreciated is a wonderful thing. Side note, I had that happen to me in December. Guys that I work with bought me what Frank Cannon showed up to his first audition with, a Fender Stratocaster and a Marshall amp.
And you played twice as hard last week on
that. I sure did. That was one of the two guitars that I played. Yes, it was.
Thank you, D's Bosses. That was very, very nice.
Yeah, very nice.
Next song.
Yep.
Next song on the album is called Did It for the Money.
So I just got to say, I love the way the intro to this song goes, because you start off with this guitar chord progression that I'm like, oh, it's another Knocking on Heaven's Door, No Woman, No Cry song. Okay. And then it's like, boom, boom, boom. Just kidding. Yeah. And then brrr, and they're wailing through stuff. I was like, oh, nice bait and switch, guys. You had me lured in with that. Okay, here we go. Here's the same old three-chord song that everybody knows.
Yeah.
No, they blew it away. Blew it away.
This is a great song. It's another rock song.
Did she do it for love?
No, she did it for money.
Yeah. Which, by the way, you told me a story today about some kind of hard times that Jeff Keith experienced after the band broke up. And I had to think, I wonder if this song ever got played in the rotation when that was going on. You want to tell that story?
So after they broke up in 1996, mm-hmm. they formed some solo projects. They did some stuff, but really grunge had kind of killed this rock and roll thing. And so they were just doing what they could. And Jeff Keith, in order to make ends meet, got a job DJing at a strip club. Rock star Jeff Keith going, all right, everybody, get out your dollar bills, candy.
Welcome to the stage, yeah. Cinnamon Diamond Sugar. But I think that Did It for the Money have to be a song that you would play, right? This is a stripper song.
Why
right?
wouldn't you? Absolutely, this is a stripper song.
All right.
By the way, before we move on from this one,
yeah,
these guys, like the Beatles, when the Beatles went to Hamburg, Germany, to get in their 10,000 hours playing their songs,
yeah,
which is what honed them as a band, which made them super successful.
Speaking of strip clubs. Yeah.
Tesla spent 3 months at a U.S. Army base in Guam.
In Guam.
Where they played 6 nights a week, 5 sets a day.
Yeah.
Played.
Yeah. And it really honed them as a band. They became good in that time and got some good food, apparently.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I guess. And he was, as he disclosed it, he was like, I'm not going to say his name so he doesn't get court-martialed or whatever, but they made friends with one of the military guys who would steal stuff, like steaks and lobsters and stuff, from the military rations to take over to give them to cook and eat.
I heard Frank Hannon on a podcast, and he was with Mark Goodman.
Yeah.
Mark Goodman, MTV VJ, one of the first groupings of MTV VJs. And Mark Goodman was recalling the early days of MTV, saying, as we know, MTV was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but it was not on in Manhattan.
Right.
New York. I mean, New York City didn't have MTV.
Right.
And so he could walk down the street and everything was cool. Yeah. And so Frank Hannon spoke up and said, you know where MTV was? Guam, because that's all we watched in Guam. We just watched nothing but MTV. So anyway, I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
Next song is called Yesterday's Gone.
As much as I want to play a Boys to Men song right now, I'm not going to do that. I just got to tell you, the music on this is really unique. Like, you got a very, very fast, shuffly drum beat. I can't tell you another song that I can think of that sounds anything like this song.
Okay.
It's obviously still very rock. It's got great guitars, but it's unique. It's different than most songs that were coming out at this time.
It's kind of speed rock, but yet the chorus is not sped up. It's just kind of slower, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's the guitars obviously are more heavily distorted, but it's got almost like an early ZZ Top vibe, except faster.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's a great tune. Very unique. I don't know that I don't think it's a single kind of song, because it's not hooky. Like, it's not, and the chorus is good, but it's not something you're going to sing to yourself later on.
Right.
It's just kind of, it's a good one to just listen to and just be like,
just rock
these
out.
Guys are really getting after it. Yeah.
Yeah. So you talked about owing Ronnie Montross a flat screen TV. Mm-hmm. You know who else they really owe a beer or more to?
Who's that?
Is Jack Russell of Great White.
Oh, yeah. He's the one that turned on Tommy Zutaut to him.
Yes. So Tom Zutaut, who discovered Motley Crue, discovered Guns N' Roses, signed these guys.
Signed these guys before he signed Guns N' Roses,
that's
by
right.
the way. So he had been at Elektra.
Yes.
When he got Motley Crue, obviously.
Yes.
And then Tesla was the first band that he signed once he moved over to Geffen, which was a brand new label at that point. And as a matter of fact, Mechanical Resonance was the first successful album for Geffen Records.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, they had Aerosmith, but, you know, Done with Mirrors was not a particularly good album
That's
for
right.
them.
That's right.
So Tesla's first album was the first successful album for Geffen Records. And obviously Tommy Zutaut is a part of that process. And he was heavily involved until he did sign that new band called Guns N' Roses. And then they didn't see him so much anymore.
Well, hey, at least they got him on board.
Okay, so for the record, of Tom Zutaut, we have now covered Appetite for Destruction. Mm-hmm. We've covered Once Bitten, Twice Shy by Great White.
Yep.
We are now covering Tesla.
Yep.
And we have covered Dr. Motley Crue twice.
Yeah, and Girls, Girls, Girls.
Girls, 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 and Dr. Feelgood. And there's some pretty great stories there.
Absolutely. Go check those episodes out. They're all fantastic.
All right. Hit stop on your tape player. Kick it out. Flip it over for side two. And we're going to be making magic.
Okay, what are your thoughts?
This is not the song you start side two with.
I agree with you. Okay. Yeah. It seems like it should be a good song, but it doesn't grab you. It doesn't. There's, to me, nothing that reaches out and grabs you about this one.
This is the first song where I'm kind of like, eh.
Yeah. This might be, I don't know if it's a skipper, but it's definitely filler for sure.
It's filler. And why in the world would you not start the second side off with the next song, which we might as well just move on and talk to?
I'm fine with doing that. I'm totally fine with doing that. Before we get there, though, we started talking about Ronnie Montrose and I told a story there, but we've mentioned that, you know, Brian Wheat's first band was called Rage. Then when he got rid of basically everybody except for Frank Hannon, they started a band called Earthshaker. Mm-hmm. And that was the guys that I mentioned earlier. And then ultimately they became City Kid. But once they got to that stage and Ronnie's like, this is City Kid sounds like Loverboy. And so if you want to be a pop band, then that's fine. But otherwise, you need to change your name.
Right.
And so they kept trying to think of names, couldn't come up with anything. It was actually their manager, I think, again, Peter Mensch, that came up with this. And he said, what do you guys think about the name Tesla? And they said, what the f*** is a Tesla?
Yeah.
And so he explained to them, you know, who Tesla was and that this kind of relationship with Edison and Marconi and all this other stuff. And they're like, okay, sounds pretty cool. But the guys had no idea who he was. This is a manager call, and I think a fantastic one. Obviously, the name has become very popular since the 90s for various reasons.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting because they have so many songs that seem to be calling back to this Tesla, Edison,
they absolutely Marconi latched on to the idea. Yeah. Yeah. He actually bought them all books. He bought them the book on Tesla, whatever I don't remember the name of it is. And he says, there's going to be a quiz, and whoever gets 100 in the quiz gets $100.
Yeah.
None of them made $100. But again, motivation, read the book. And so they did. They read it. And so that's where you get Edison's Medicine and you get the names like Mechanical Resonance and
Great Radio Controversy.
There you go.
All right. Next. I mean, come on. Let's get
Can
to
we,
this
you,
one.
I'm dying. Pushing you off and you wanted to jump in, right?
All right.
Here we go.
This song is called The Way It Is.
Way it is. It's the way that it goes.
You better stop it. We're going to listen to the whole thing.
Oh, man. It's so good. Tell me about your thoughts.
So I've got the football in my hand, and I've got it back.
Uh-huh.
If it were not for a game changer on this album,
game changer,
this would be the Spike the Football best song.
So let me tell you this. I love the song. I've listened to the song for years. As I pulled into your driveway, I was listening to this song. And because of other music that I had been listening to earlier in the week this week, I was like, huh. So I'm going to play you a song by Led Zeppelin. You tell me what you think.
Okay.
Okay. both beautiful songs. And I'm not going to say it's a copy, but
no.
I got to think it was inspired.
Super, super similar.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when we talked about the song Hysteria.
Yeah.
And the talk, what was the Pink Floyd song that was?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was, yeah, I can't remember which.
Goodbye.
Oh, yeah, Goodbye Blue Skies. Now, that one's pretty well note for note, but yeah. But this one, like, the chords are slightly different, but it's the sound, the pace, the melodies, all very similar, but both beautiful, beautiful songs in their own right.
Yes.
And I don't know if I said it. That's Thank You by Led Zeppelin, by the way.
Okay. The way it is rocked up, though, but, man, such a great song.
Love it.
The video for this, I don't know if you've watched the video
for this. I did not.
So this is at the height of their powers, right? This mm-hmm. is like the, I think this is the fourth single released.
Yeah.
This is in spring of 1990. But it's like the radio DJ starts the video. He's like, all right, everybody, you're coming in to see the Tesla concert. If you bring two cans for the homeless, you get in for free.
Uh-huh.
And it's in Sacramento. It's their hometown.
Right.
And so everybody's there bringing cans for the homeless to watch their Tesla concert. And that's it's just great. Obviously doing great things, feeding the people, putting on a good show.
So you mentioned this band is from Sacramento. This was, I mean, Sacramento was known for being the gold rush town, right? But
yeah.
it's also, you know, at the stage that they were growing up there, it's a very much a working man's town, right?
Right.
And all of these guys are very blue collar kind of kids. And the name of Brian Wheat's book that I've referred to a few times is called Son of a Milkman. As it turns out, you know, you've heard that old joke about, you know, the milkman came to your house and that's actually what happened to his mother. And she got pregnant, and he is actually the son of the milkman.
The milkman knocked his mother up.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah. And he says he can remember that his brother came and had bought a record player. And he remembers the very first time on this record player that his brother had probably bought with money he got from stealing stolen bike stuff, hearing Paul McCartney play. And if you've ever seen Brian Wheat play, especially on the 5-man acoustical jam, he's got a very unique looking bass. It is the exact same type of bass that Paul McCartney would play most of the time whenever he was playing for the Beatles. It is a Hofner style bass. It looks kind of like a violin the way that it's shaped, you know. So he said he was so entranced by Paul McCartney's voice because the album that he was listening to was Revolver, if I remember that right. Revolver is the album. Well, the first song on the album is Taxman, but the album that he had gotten had a scratch on it, so that one he couldn't play the first song, so immediately went to the second song, and that was Paul McCartney playing. And so he said, had the record not had a scratch, I probably would have been in love with George Harrison's voice, but because we skipped to the next song, I got Paul McCartney.
Okay, so I wanted to bring this up.
Yeah.
Brian Wheat eventually marries Sandy Soraya. Now, I was talking to our buddy James Buckley on the way over here.
Yeah.
He claims that the Soraya song on the Shocker soundtrack.
Shocker the movie?
Yes.
Classic. Cinematic greatness.
Hey, Wes Craven's Shocker.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's Soraya and Steve Lukather.
Okay.
And the song's name is Timeless Love. Mm-hmm. And he is spiking the football with me. He says, this is one of the greatest ballads of the 1980s.
Wow.
And I was telling him, Soraya had a song called Love Has Taken Its Toll, which I absolutely love. And I would never get to talk about it because it's not a big enough hit. People don't know it.
Yeah.
But I'm dropping it right here.
Okay, then.
I love this song, D.
It's a good song.
I love it.
It's a good song.
I hate to be done with this song.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. It's the second best song on the album. Next song on the album is a song called Flight to Nowhere.
Another rock song about being a rock star.
This is about drugs.
It's about the whole lifestyle, I think. Yeah.
This is another rocker. It's a good song.
Okay. Speaking of drugs and booze.
Yes.
you know that their first opening act, they opened for David Lee Roth, right?
Okay.
So he apparently, like, I mean, they're obviously a young band at this point, and they didn't really talk to him very much. And it would be a situation like when he was walking the hall, they would tell everybody else to get out of the way and could make way for Dave. Dave is coming through, right? And I'm going to sidetrack here just a second. I just heard this story about from Henry Rollins. Said he was going in to do some sort of podcast interview or something like that. And as he's going in, it's like 9 a.m, David Lee Roth is coming out. And David Lee Roth is wearing like this full fur, like right? And Henry Rollins, first time he's ever met David Lee Roth. And he's like, oh my gosh, Diamond Dave, you know, I love your stuff. Grew up on your music, love it. And Diamond Dave, David Lee Roth opens up his coat. And it's like lined with beer bottles. He's like, hey man, you want a beer? And Henry Rollins doesn't drink, doesn't do drugs. You know, he's like, no, it's 9 a.m., man. I'm pretty cool. Thanks. And David Lee Roth says, what's the matter? You got school tomorrow. And so that's my lead into this story. At some point while they're opening for them, they get a call and it's like, David wants to see you. And it's when he wants to meet you up in his hotel room. And so they go up to meet David Lee Roth in his hotel room. And when they walk in, he's laying down with two incredibly beautiful women whose panties are on the floor in between them and him. And he propositions them and he's like, hey, Pete Angelus and I would like to manage your band.
Pete Angelus? We just talked about him last week as the manager for the Black Crowes.
He was the one who made the Black Crowes who they were. Taught Chris Robinson how to be on stage in a big arena, how to dance across the stage. He made that band. He took them to where they needed to be.
Right.
He's the guy who directed the David Lee Roth videos, directed those first three Van Halen videos. He's an amazing dude, right? And I have to think this is just before all of that, right? This is when they're just early getting started.
It's got to be Eat 'Em and Smile, you know, Mechanical Resonance times.
So had they said yes, Pete Angelus might not have been available to do the Black Crowes.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah. But they said, no, we got a couple guys already. Thanks.
Gosh. Hey, you know, I sent you a deal this week.
Yeah.
Tesla was friends with the Black Crowes.
Yeah.
In fact, Tesla did an early MTV Unplugged date with the Black Crowes, like together. And I heard them talking about this. So they were buddies, but they said that they think they smoked out MTV. Like MTV had not seen that much marijuana smoke in one setting ever.
Yeah.
And that's saying something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's interesting that these guys were friends.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And just a couple more songs. We're going to have to decide between these two bands of these two albums, which one's the best.
Let's get to it.
All right.
Next song on the album.
Hold on to your hats, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to have to play it. Here is the song that introduced both Jason and I to this band. And to this day is my favorite Tesla song. This song's called Love Song.
Song if you want.
I could listen to that song over and over and over and never get tired of it. You have this beautiful classical style of an introduction. I mean, talk about we've just had rocker, 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 and all of a sudden they yank the rug out from underneath you and you're listening to an acoustical guitar playing finger picking classical style music. And then they come in nice and smooth. I mean, such a smooth transition from that into this incredible power ballad. I mean,
game changer.
Amazing.
Game
amazing.
Changer.
Yeah, love me.
Love is knocking outside the door, waiting This was my intro to Tesla. It was your intro to Tesla. And I'd venture to say it was a lot of people's intro to Tesla.
Yeah.
The intro is fantastic. It slides into a verse that's beautiful. It gives you this wonderful chorus. And then it like ramps up at the very end with the "Love Will Find a Way" part.
Huh. The guitar solo is one you memorize. I mean, it is arguably a perfect song. If there can be multiple perfect movies like Raiders of the Lost Ark and Back to the Future and The Godfather, then I would say this is one of those perfect songs.
I mean, it's absolutely one of the best songs of 1989 and a brilliant power ballad.
Yeah. This is another one that is on the five-man acoustical jam. And they do it, of course, completely acoustically, and it's still amazing.
Except the guitar solo. Do you remember that part?
Did they pull out the electric for it?
They're like, we can't do this whole thing acoustic, and they lay into that electric guitar solo.
That's fantastic.
I want to talk about the video for a second, because the video is nearly perfect as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So this was shot July 7th, 1989. Mm-hmm. So think how hot it is. 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, right.
Right? So they had a concert in Sacramento, and a local radio station, KRXQ in Sacramento, mm-hmm. had a contest awarding backstage passes to the fan who created the best banner. Okay, now the banner had to say KRXQ, Tesla, and Love Song.
Okay.
And so when you watch this music video, that's why they have all these people that got these Love Song banners in the crowd.
Fantastic.
And you got people like on people's shoulders, and it just really takes me back to a time, because you've got cute girls and you've got, you know, the guys all got their shirts off and everybody's having a blast, mm-hmm. and it's hotter than, you know what, July 4th weekend.
Right.
There's no phones, of course. Everybody is engaged in what's going on, yeah. and it is just, it looks like a blast. So if you're a young person,
yep.
and you're like, what was like in the 80s at a concert with before phones? This is it. Everybody was engaged in what was going on the show.
And, you know, you told me this story, but I'm going to retell it, because yeah. it almost takes away from the song, but this is such a good song that I just have to think, I'm not going to call it that. I'm not going to say that it takes away. It's what opened everyone's eyes, okay?
Sure.
So the song was a very slow burn, and it was only getting played on the album-oriented rock radio. That was it, right? It had not crossed over, and it was like starting to kind of plateau a little bit even with that.
Gosh.
But Cliff Bernstein and Peter Mensch were also managing the Rolling Stones.
Yes.
And the Rolling Stones were involved on their Steel Wheels tour, right?
Which they had recorded in Montserrat.
Yeah, that's right, which we talked about on our Dire Straits episode too long ago. And so they saw that this song had the potential to break the band, mm-hmm. but also saw that it wasn't quite breaking the band yet. And so what they did was they said to the radio, like the chart-topping radio, you know, your top 40 radio, they said, hey, we'll give you 2 tickets to the Steel Wheels tour that you can give away to your fans, but we want you to play Love Song.
I love it.
Brilliant management.
It is,
brilliant,
right?
Brilliant management, yeah.
And you know what? In fairness, this song is so good that it merited that, and mm-hmm. it did break the band.
Absolutely.
So it just needed a little push over the hill.
Yeah.
And here we are talking about one of the best songs of the late 80s.
Yep. I put this management decision in the same category as Pete Angelus saying, okay, now talk about how bad the beer is, because we're gonna get your contract renegotiated after I get you on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine.
And if you want the details of that story, go back to last week where we talked about the Black Crowes.
Yep.
By the way, Love Song reached number 10 on the Hot 100. Now, none of these songs are radio, like, top 40 hits.
Right.
Except this one.
Yep.
Okay? So it reached number 10. And as you said, it was released in August. It didn't peak until January.
Wow.
That's a long time, right?
That's a slow burn, right?
So number 10, Love Song tops out at number 10.
Okay.
Deserves better. Way better, in my opinion.
Okay.
Number 9. 2 to Make It Right by Seduction. Number 8, Free Fallin' by Tom Petty.
Okay, that's
a classic. A great song,
that's
right?
A classic, yeah.
Just Between You and Me, Lou Gramm. Remember that one?
Not really. We're talking about Lou Gramm, Foreigner, right?
It's, yeah.
Okay.
It's all right. Number 6, Rhythm Nation by Janet Jackson.
Yeah, that was a big one in the day. Yeah.
Number 5, Downtown Train by Rod Stewart.
Ish.
Eh.
Yeah.
Number 4, Everything by Jody Watley.
Nope.
Another Day in Paradise by Phil Collins.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
That was a big one.
Yeah.
Pump Up the Jam by Technotronic. Pump Up the Jam.
That's a pretty iconic song, yeah.
And the number 1 song this week in 89, mm-hmm. How Am I Supposed to Live Without You, Michael Bolton.
Oh, gosh. When your best song tops out at 10 and Michael Bolton is in the number 1 spot, that kind of hurts. Oh, I have a different shirt on.
Hey,
you have the same shirt on.
I got a haircut.
I have a different shirt on. What happened? What just happened right now?
For the first time in the history of the Surely Can't Be Serious podcast, we forgot to include a song as we were going track by track.
I really can't. I feel like maybe your editing software accidentally edited it out. I really feel like we talked about this.
No, this is what happened. I'll tell you, this is the honest truth. I have my stack of notes, and for each song, I have its own page.
Yeah.
Well, the wind blew, and they went. And when I gathered them, I guess I lost one.
Yeah.
And it was a big one, right?
Yeah. Again, I'm just like, man, I could have sworn we talked about this song. I did have that moment where you were like, okay, last song. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, I thought we had 2 songs. And then you're like, no, we got 2 more songs. And I was like, okay, then we've got it. But we didn't get it.
So let's talk about the song Paradise.
Dude, we're idiots.
How could we look at this song?
I don't know, man. Yeah. I mean, gorgeous intro. It reminds me of Home Sweet Home, you know, with that piano and the wailing guitar, but you're not going to agree with me, but it's better. I like Paradise better than Home Sweet Home.
Wow.
It's so beautiful. The guitar is so emotional. I love the piano in it. And then when he comes in with the lyrics, it just brings it all home. It's fantastic.
The My Sweet Paradise and the strong keyboards, and it actually, it's a ballad and then ramps up into a rocker at the end of it.
Yeah.
So fun. You know, the funny thing about this is I was mowing the other day and I was thinking to myself, I really was thinking about Deaf Dave.
Uh-huh.
Because he's not familiar with Tesla at all. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, you know, if Dave will just give Tesla a chance to get to side 2, on side 2, you've got Love Song and you've got The Way It Is and you've got Paradise. And I'm like, wait a minute. We didn't talk about Paradise. So anyway, Dave, thank you. You were the spark that triggered the memory. This song is an amazing song. I love it. I actually love the 5-minute acoustical jam version of this song
100%.
Better.
The studio version is fantastic, but there is a reality of that stage version, that audience singing along.
And they're singing along the Hold Me Close, Hold Me Tight.
It's incredible, man. It's incredible.
Yeah, love it.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. A first in over 5 years of doing this. We missed a song. Sorry about that. We brought it back.
We got it in just in time, though.
Okay. And now returning you back to your regularly scheduled program.
Okay. Last song on the album.
Here we go.
The song is called Party's Over.
Great closer.
It's a rocker, man.
It is a great closer.
It's a great closer.
It really is. And I mean, perfect name, perfect into a concert if you're at the concert.
Yeah.
And so to tell the listening audience the little behind the scenes here, you accidentally pushed a different button whenever we're going to listen to Party's Over, and it was Modern Day Cowboy, right?
Yeah.
So that reminded me of one more story that I've got to tell.
Okay.
So before they came up with the name Tesla, as they were still City Kid and they were trying to think of a new name, they were hanging out with Chrissy Hynde of the Pretenders.
Yeah.
Brian said she was the coolest chick. He said she would try to help them think up band names, but she was like always thinking of the dirtiest, nastiest band names. And she said, imagine this, Modern Day Cowboy by the new band Dog's Balls.
Yep. All right, I got to drop a little nugget on you.
Okay.
culturally,
yes,
the term "turn out the lights, the party's over,"
uh-huh,
was popularized by, do you know this?
No.
Don Meredith, former quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, on Monday Night Football, when a game got out of hand and it was clear who the winner was going to be, he would sing "Turn Out the Lights, the Party's Over," which he got from a Willie Nelson song called "The Party's Over."
Okay.
All right, D, as we go into final judgment, keep in mind, it doesn't matter who gets the best of who. It doesn't matter who hurts who the most. It really is just the way it is. Okay?
Nicely done.
Final judgment time.
Yep.
So here's the deal. I've really been laboring on this because going through the Black Crowes album last week, there were no skippers in that album. And there were some amazing songs. And then I go through this Tesla album this week, and I'm like, all rock, I mean, killer, fun songs. And then you've got a couple of game changers for me, like The Way It Is, Love Song. I think Hank Tough is excellent. So I asked myself, what's the better album? And I think the answer to that question is Shake Your Money Maker is the better album. But I can't overcome my nostalgia for Tesla and Great Radio Controversy. And so I asked myself, yeah, it's the best album, but if you're walking out the door, which one are you grabbing? And I'm like, if I'm walking out the door, I'm grabbing Great Radio Controversy.
Wow. Okay.
D?
So when we started, when we had just talked about this, I had no doubt in my mind who I was going to be picking. I had zero doubt. Like, I owned this album. I owned the Five-Man Acoustical Jam. I owned Psychotic Supper. I had them all.
Right.
Like, Song and Emotion blew me away. Love that song, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I love those albums. I had heard the singles off of Shake Your Money Maker, and obviously we played those in the band as well, but I never owned the album. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, Black Crowes are great, but so before listening to the albums, in my mind, the winner was going to be clear. Like, Frank Cannon was a guitar hero of mine that I ultimately got to meet and I got to play guitar with, and it was a fantastic moment in my life. You know, I've been saying don't meet your heroes after my Lou Ferrigno experience.
Right.
But then I think about Frank Cannon, I'm like, no, go ahead and meet your heroes, because sometimes they can be completely awesome. And I was confident that I was going to pick Tesla, no question about it, except that then I listened to all of Shake Your Money Maker for the very first time, and my mind was blown. Like, it is a flawless album. Every song on there is good, and a few of them are just blow your mind fantastic. And I got a new favorite song out of the mix, Twice as Hard. I loved it. Loved it. And so, early 90s D would definitely be picking Great Radio Controversy. My musical tastes have changed in the last 35 years, and I still love this album. But if I'm walking out the door, I'm grabbing Shake Your Moneymaker.
I love it. I love it. That's fantastic. I don't think there's a wrong answer to this one.
Now, I cannot say that I would say the same if we were talking about Five-Man Acoustical Jam. I might pick that one before I pick Shake Your Moneymaker.
Okay.
I really might. It's a tough call.
Well, that was a huge album for me as well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we want to hear from you guys. Which of these albums is your favorite and why? And reach out to us. We'd like to hear from you.
Yeah. Let us know. Is it Shake Your Money Maker? Is it Great Radio Controversy? How does Five-Man Acoustical Jam fit in the mix for you?
Let's talk about what we have next week.
Okay. What do we got?
Next week, D, this is going to be exciting because we have Rambo versus Commando. Arnold versus Stallone in the summer of 1985. It was huge. These guys battled it out at the box office. You haven't seen either of these movies. I am so anxious to hear what you have to say.
I'm going to be breaking my serrated knife, Jerry, if you will.
That's right. Hey, Stallone versus Schwarzenegger. It doesn't get any better than
that. It doesn't. It doesn't.
Summer of 85.
And you're going to get my genuine first-time reaction for this. So be sure and tune in.
I can't wait. It's going to be so fun.
Thank you guys so much. We'll see you next week.
We're shipping Father's Day gifts with a rapid-fire round of questions. Ready?
Yes, my gift. Can you pack it?
Yep.
Ship it?
Yes.
Guarantee it?
Of course.
Oh, send a set of golf clubs.
Oh, hole in one.
Protect electronics? Dogproof it? Return it if they hate it?
Yes, no, and yeah.
Are you the UPS store?
Hey, we have a winner! Woo!
Visit theupsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, prices, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS Store. Visit a store today.